Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, listeners. I hope you're doing well today. Thank you for choosing to listen to this new episode of my podcast, which is here to help you improve your English through regular listening practice. I'll give you a brief introduction to this episode in just a moment. But first of all, a quick note for the premium subscribers. Hello, Premium Lepsters. I just wanted to let you know that I'm currently working on Premium Series 29. And this will be a way to review and consolidate language that came up in Luke's English podcast number 704, which was the recent episode of the Rick Thompson Report. So P29 will all be about learning to speak English like my dad, including some analysis of how my dad uses English, and then a focus on broadening your vocabulary with a big list of target language for you to learn and use, including various verbs and their collocations, verb phrases, noun phrases, adjectives, and adverbs, all used by Rick Thompson in that episode. I've picked out some of the language which I think is particularly useful and specific, and I'll be going through it all in detail using my particular set of teaching skills. Of course, there will be a PDF with pretty much a full transcript, full learning notes, with all the language in context and definitions and examples, a memory test, and listen and repeat pronunciation drills to help you practice saying all the target language in full sentences. So this is my tried and tested method for Luke's English Podcast Premium, and Premium Series 29 episodes will be arriving soon. If you'd like to sign up to Luke's English Podcast Premium and get all those episodes when they arrive, as well as all the other previous episodes of the Premium Podcast, just go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. Okay? Right. So let's move on to this free episode of the podcast. This is episode, what is it? Episode 709? Let me just confirm that. It's easy to lose count after... Yes, it is episode 709. So this is episode 709, and my mum is on the podcast this time, which is great. If you don't know, her name is Jill Thompson, and, well, she's my mum, of course. This is not an episode of Jill's book club, as you'll hear me mention in a moment, but maybe we could call this Jill's Film Club, because we will be talking about a well-known film that she watched recently. And also it could be called an episode of Jill's Philosophy Club, because we talk too about philosophy, specifically Stoicism, which has its roots in ancient Greece. There's also some talk of the COVID-19 pandemic, which I expect you've realized, you've noticed, has affected everyone's lives over the last year or so. You might be wondering about the connection between being in lockdown, the philosophy of Stoicism, and the film Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day is the film that we'll be talking about, as you'll see in the episode title. So you might be thinking, what's the connection between those things? Well, let's say that a lot of it is about how to look after your mental health during difficult times. Mental health, mental well-being, dealing with anxiety and so on. These are things that I think everyone struggles with to an extent. How about you? How has this year been for you? I think that a lot of people are understandably worried about work, about family life, about the well-being of loved ones, about the future, and about the state of the world in general. It can all get a bit overwhelming when you think about it too much. I'll say no more at this stage except this. The aim of this episode is just to talk about a subject that both my mum and I are interested in and have found useful when you consider those things, you know, the state of the world and how we deal with that sort of mentally. Now, we don't claim to be experts on Stoicism, but my mum in particular tries to apply some of its principles in her daily life and has found it to be helpful when things get a bit much. I'll let you discover more as you listen, and I hope that you can notice and pick up some useful bits of language for talking about this kind of thing. So stick around, and I'll talk to you again on the other side of this conversation. But now, let's get started properly, and here is the jingle. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I hope you're doing all right today as you listen to this. And I hope you stick around and enjoy this new episode from start to finish. And I'm glad to say that my mum is back on the podcast today, so all the Jill Thompson fans should be happy. But this is not an episode of Jill's Book Club. Normally, these days with my mum, we do Jill's Book Club where, you know, we talk about a book. But this is not Jill's Book Club, even though we have been planning to do one. But the reason, well, mum, you're here. Why is this not an episode of Jill's Book Club?
Because you didn't read the book that we were going to talk about.
Yeah, it's my fault. I haven't read the book yet. I got the audiobook version of it, but I still haven't got round to listening to it all.
Well, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I really, really must, because I'm such a big fan of the Beatles. Mm. So, listeners, we were going to talk about a book called 1, 2, 3, 4 by Craig Brown, which is all about the Beatles. But the Beatle chat is going to have to wait for another time, I'm afraid.
It'll wait.
Yeah, that's in the pipeline, listeners. I will read the book, okay? All right. I'm a bad reader. I've got bad reading habits.
Well, so am I at the moment, actually. I'm finding reading very difficult.
That's not like you.
It isn't.
What's going on there?
Oh, concentration is shot. Something to do with a pandemic, I think.
Oh, yes. Mm. Makes it hard to focus on things normally.
Yeah. Yeah, my brain is like a flitting thing.
You're on Twitter, though, Mum. I think this might be the effect. This could be the effects of social media.
It could be. You're not wrong.
Twitter, you know, social media is great and everything, but it's also terrible.
Yes, I know. But the people I follow are all really cool, and I like interacting with them every day.
Yeah.
But no, I know it's true. It's my concentration is completely shot, and it's partly to do with that.
Hmm. Well, I hope you can concentrate for the next hour or so.
So do I.
As we talk together. All right. Now, actually, today we're going to talk about things like, well, you mentioned the pandemic. We're going to talk about things like how to be philosophical about the pandemic. I mean, what kind of mental attitude we can have at times like this.
First of all, I think you need to decide what you mean by philosophical, used in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you say, oh, I'm being philosophical about it, what do you think it means?
Well, I would say that we are, so, yeah.
And that's philosophical with a small p.
Philosophical with a small p. I guess, listeners, we know what philosophy is. This is, you know, well, it's probably worth defining it. Let's look at the two uses of the word philosophy or being philosophical, all right? The first one is philosophy with a capital P. Does it have a capital P?
Well, you see, all these terms over, you know, don't forget that philosophy first started back in ancient Greece. And, of course, a lot of meanings and, you know, things have been sort of changed or altered as the years have gone by. And philosophy, with a capital P, because you tend to differentiate the modern sort of idea of a word with a small initial letter and the going back to the original ancient Greek concept of the word, you put a capital letter. So in a moment, we'll probably come on to the difference between Stoic and Stoic philosophy.
Mm.
So to be Stoic, in modern sense of the word, you use a small s. If you're talking about the philosophy of Stoicism, you use a capital S. Anyway, we'll come on to that.
Because the philosophy of Stoicism is actually the name of a school of thought.
Yes, and it's slightly different from what people tend to mean when they say, oh, she's very stoical.
Right, you know, we'll come on to that in a second. But, okay, philosophy we know is about, you know, thinking about It's
easy, isn't it?
Yeah, defining philosophy is actually quite difficult, but essentially, people usually say it's like people thinking about like the meaning of life and stuff. What's it all about?
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily trying to work out the meaning of life. Philosophy is just about, I guess, thinking of different ways of understanding the way that we live and the way that we should think about our lives and various schools of thought on how life should be lived in the best way.
And I mean, I asked you, because you started off by saying, are you philosophical about things? And when people say that, what they tend to mean by that word is, are you able to look at, do you look at things logically and systematically? You're able to see things in the round.
Are you able to take a sort of an objective view?
Yeah.
So listeners, we mentioned two uses of the word philosophical. One relates to specifically the academic pursuit of philosophy, right? The ancient Greeks and all that stuff.
Yes, so there's lots of different kinds of philosophy, of course.
Many different types of philosophy. I have done I did do an episode once about philosophy, and I talked about all the different schools of thought. Mm. So listeners can refer back to that. So that's philosophy in the sort of ancient Greek sense and all that stuff, and ethics and morality and reason and logic and so on. Mm-hmm. But then, yes, there is this phrase that people use in common parlance, which is being philosophical about it. For example, well, you know, I try to be philosophical about it, or you've got to be philosophical about it. For example, if you're talking to someone who is, I don't know, like they're ill.
Mm.
You know, oh, Dave's ill. It must be really hard for him. Yeah, but you know, he's very good because he's very philosophical about it.
Mm.
So this means that he takes a measured and maybe objective and reasonable approach to thinking about it.
That's right.
Mm.
Yeah, very good.
Okay. So in terms of the pandemic, Mum, in the UK, certainly at the moment, there's very strict lockdown in place still.
Yeah.
This is maybe the third lockdown that you've had.
Yes. This is the worst one.
This is the worst one. Can you just tell us about the lockdown? We're going to talk about being philosophical about the lockdown and the pandemic and stuff in a moment. But tell us about this lockdown at the moment. Why is it the worst one?
Mainly, I think, because it's happened in the winter and we've had some horrible weather and we haven't been able to. In the first lockdown, it wasn't so bad because it was springtime. We had beautiful weather. We could go in the garden. We could walk in the park comfortably. And, you know, it didn't feel too bad. But this time, I think because of all the mix-up over Christmas, first of all, we were told that we could have Christmas and we could have family come to stay. And then at the last minute, Johnson said, no, sorry, I made a mistake. Oh, except he didn't. He never says he made a mistake. He says, no, I've changed my mind. You can't meet together. And Christmas is cancelled. That was just a few days before Christmas. And that was a real blow for a lot of people because they were looking forward to seeing their family and, you know, doing the usual things. And then, of course, it was followed by the winter, and we have had a tough winter with lots of snow and cold weather. And also because, you know, the number of deaths went up and it was all pretty grim, and it's made it much more difficult. Everybody says it's much more difficult this time.
Mm, that's right. And you're still essentially stuck inside. You're not allowed to mix with other households.
Can't see other people. That's the main thing. I mean, we just would love to see, you know, James and you and your little girl and all that. But of course, we haven't been able to for months and months, and it gets more and more difficult. But, you know, what can you do? Not a lot.
You've got to be philosophical about it.
You've just got to put up with it and try and adopt a reasonable way of thinking about things, which is why we come onto this subject.
Yes. So being philosophical about it. So, okay, so we're actually going to talk about, I guess, philosophy in everyday life and how we can apply certain philosophical principles to dealing with things like the experience of living in lockdown, and specifically certain kinds of philosophy. I mean, are you philosophical about it, Mum?
Well, if you mean in terms of am I trying to look at it objectively and in the round and logically, I try to be. I'm not always, but I do try to be, which is why, I mean, I've been sort of vaguely interested in this particular sort of philosophy, which we're going to talk about today, which is Stoic philosophy. I've been interested in it for quite a while. And it is very useful in this sort of circumstance. In fact, ancient philosophy has been adapted in modern times for use in CBT. Do you know what that is?
Cognitive behavioral therapy.
That's right. It's been adapted and used in that form of therapy very successfully, you know, for obvious reasons, because it helps you train your mind or helps you to use your mind in a certain way.
So we're talking now specifically about a certain type of philosophy, a certain school of philosophical thought, which is called Stoicism.
That's right, right, with a capital S.
With a capital S. But this, again, we have several meanings of, or several uses of the word Stoic and Stoicism.
Yeah. Well, that's why the ancient philosophy one has to have a capital S.
So the name of the school of philosophical thought, which was sort of developed in ancient Greece, that is Stoicism with a capital S.
Yes.
Because it's the name of it, literally the name of a school.
Well, I think the word comes from the fact, and I may be wrong here because I'm by no means an expert, but in the back of my mind, I think it was named, apparently they used to meet the people, Zeno was the man who started it all, and he and his followers used to meet in a porch, some sort of building or porch or something, which is called a stoa. And so it became Stoicism. I think that's right.
I've heard that they used to meet, rather than meeting in a sort of private space, they would meet in a sort of semi-public spot.
Well, that's why I think it was a porch, because it was open. You know, it wasn't in a room. I don't know.
A porch, I guess. I mean, funny though, this, because I've dealt with the word porch before and have had discussions with my friends about what the difference between a porch and a veranda and a terrace and a balcony and stuff. Mm. But here we're talking about a porch in the ancient Greek sense, which would be, I guess, a place with some columns and a roof over the top, but it's also sort of open.
Yes.
So you can just wander in and out. And I heard that the Stoics first used to meet each other in a sort of a market area.
Well, probably. Maybe the porch was in a market. I don't know, Luke.
Maybe it was a covered market under a porch. But anyway, the porch was called a stoa.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so they got their name from the fact that from the place that
from
they
the
used
place
to meet.
Where they met. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's just look at these several meanings of Stoic and Stoicism in the same way that we have philosophy and being philosophical about things. Mm-hmm. So, several meanings. Now, the one that we find in the Oxford Advanced Learner's Dictionary, which is a good dictionary for learners of English, the one that we find there is probably the more commonly used meaning of Stoic. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's a state of mind or an attitude which involves accepting hardship or pain.
Yeah.
Not complaining about difficult things and not really making a fuss.
Just putting up with things.
Yeah. It's a bit like the concept of the stiff upper lip.
Yes.
Which is often used to describe British people who keep their emotions under control.
Yeah.
This is actually very similar to being philosophical about it, I suppose.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of. Let's just read the description, the definition from the Oxford Learner's Dictionary. Stoic, adjective, able to suffer pain or trouble without complaining or showing what you're feeling. For example, he never really shared his emotions, for example.
Yeah.
He was always very stoic about his experiences of the war and his poor health in later life.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yes.
And, you know, this one makes me think of things like your Yorkshire roots, because is this not sort of something we associate with, like, you know, the people who come from Yorkshire? They're very stoic and they don't complain, mustn't grumble, you know.
Yes. The sort of attitude that my dad had about his sufferings during the war and all that sort of thing. You don't talk about that, you forget about that, put it to the back of your mind, just put up with it.
Yeah, just kind of put the, on one hand, this is positive because it just you know, you can just move on and carry on.
Yes, except but that on... you don't, you see. You put it to the back of your mind and you never deal with it. You never work it all out. You just try and suppress it. And that's not good.
Yeah, it's not. It's not healthy to do that, to bottle things up.
That's right.
Then Stoicism, the noun, this is also from the dictionary, similar, you know, the related meaning.
Yes.
Stoicism means the fact of not complaining or showing what you're feeling when you're suffering.
Yes.
For example, she endured her long illness with stoicism.
Yes.
She showed great stoicism through all the pain.
Yeah.
Right. But let's move on to the second one. This is the ancient philosophical movement with specific principles that we can live by. Yeah. And the word comes from a certain school of ancient Greek philosophy, as we've said. Mm-hmm. And there's more to it than just not complaining about things.
Yes.
And this is the main topic of the episode. Let's explore Stoicism and understand how we can apply these principles, which were first defined by Greek philosophers over 2,000 years ago. So
yes, more than that, but never mind. Yeah.
2,300 years ago?
I don't
know
how many. Anyway, ancient Greece, a long time ago.
Yeah. Mm. So how can we apply, what are these principles? How can we apply these principles to our lives in order to perhaps live a bit better? How can these principles help us to look after our mental health during difficult times, like, for example, during this awful pandemic that we're living through?
Yeah.
Now, I'm still in introduction mode here.
Okay.
So we also are going to talk about a film and kind of use this film as a sort of case study to understand Stoicism.
Yeah.
What's the film that we're going to reference?
Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. I wonder if in countries around the world this film is called Groundhog Day. I doubt it. I mean, I don't think, for example, that in Japan it's called, you know, Groundhog Day. It's not going to be called Groundhog Day, or in Spain it'll have a different name. In France it's probably got a different name, you know. So we need to just try and explain quickly the film so that people go, ah, I know which one you're talking about.
Mm.
So what's Groundhog Day all about?
Well, it's about this man played by, what's his name?
Bill Murray.
Bill Murray, who is a weatherman in a TV station, and he has to go to Punxsutawney, which is somewhere on the east coast of America, where they have this tradition of they have a groundhog which is kept in a cage. And when I don't really understand it. It's to do with predicting the weather, this poor animal. If he comes out and a shadow is cast over him or something, it means the winter's going to go on longer. I don't know it, actually, yeah. Luke. But anyway, Phil, the character's name, thinks this is all a load of rubbish and he doesn't want to be there. And he's very cynical and very cross and angry with everybody and very rude and all the rest of it. And he goes to bed at night in his rather cute little bed and breakfast place where he's staying, and goes to sleep. The next morning, the alarm goes off and he realizes almost immediately that it's the same day and he's going to have to go through the whole thing all over again. And that continues forever and ever, you know, for a long, long time. Each day he wakes up, it's the same day and he has to relive it. And he has a terrible time in all sorts of ways until he suddenly realizes, and I think the main thing that makes him realize that he's got to learn from this, that it's some sort of test, is when the Andy McDowell character, who he fancies, he's talking to her and he tells her about it. He says, I've got to live the same day over and over again. It's a curse. And she says, well, I don't know. It might not be. It might be very useful. And that sort of he suddenly realizes, ah, yes, maybe I could use this repeated day to learn about things and sort myself out. And that's what he does, using several Stoic principles.
The film is really interesting in the sense that well, on one hand, it's just a romantic comedy with a quirky plot, which is like this magical sort of plot where, yeah, he's stuck in some kind of time loop and he has to repeat the same day over and over again.
And it's funny as well because, you know, the things that happen to him, you know they're going to happen after a while. And
yeah, it's actually amazing. It's a really great film.
Mm.
It's funny, but it's also really profound.
Mm.
There are moments of there are really some really touching moments.
Yeah.
Like when he tries to save the life of an old homeless man.
Yeah.
And no matter what he does, the man dies anyway.
Mm.
And, you know, he gives him food, he takes him to hospital, he tries to put, you know, to put him in a home. And no matter what he does, the guy always dies at the end of the day. And that's really sad. And there are also some really funny moments and where, for example, Phil kidnaps the groundhog. And Bill Murray is driving a truck with the groundhog and...
Yeah, that's ridiculous slapstick stuff.
Yeah, Bill Murray is really funny. Mm. So on one hand, it's comedy, lighthearted, romantic comedy. He's trying to win the heart of Andy McDowell. But on the other hand, yes, it's sort of very profound and it sort of seems to explore all sorts of philosophical questions. You mentioned that he eventually succeeds by following Stoic principles, but the film is not, I don't think the writer or the director of the film intentionally chose Stoic principles. I don't know if they were thinking specifically about Stoicism, but the film does allow us to, it's quite convenient in the sense that it quite closely follows some Stoic principles.
Mm.
Okay. Also, I should point out that the phrase, it's like Groundhog Day, this is another phrase that we do use sometimes.
Particularly now in the pandemic, every day does seem to be the same.
Yes. So it's like Groundhog Day has become a phrase, and it sums up the feeling that we have when we seem to be living the same day over and over again. For example, I don't know, if you've got some job, if you're doing some awful job, and the job is the same every day. Like, for example, I worked for a year in a shop and the days were just the same every day. You know, just customers coming in with the same questions, the same routine. It was like Groundhog Day, you know, meaning it wasn't a very happy experience because it was just so repetitive. So, yeah, whenever your life seems to be going nowhere, or when you're trapped or bored or frustrated, or you have a feeling of déjà vu, like you've seen it before, a bit like living in lockdown, then you can say, oh, it's like Groundhog Day. Yes. Yep. Okay, so it's kind of ideal, really, for understanding all of this. Let's see. So, yes, you mentioned certain Stoic values that Phil seems to learn and apply to his life in order to make it a success.
Well, it's kind of Stoic principles, which are what he does, only he doesn't realize he's doing it. So the main one really is a thing called the dichotomy of control, where you have to accept in life that there are things you can control and there are things that you can't control. Now, this thing, the dichotomy of control, is used in all sorts of used as a tool in all sorts of things these days, like in CBT, or I think it's used in Alcoholics Anonymous as well, that sort of thing, because you have to realize that the outer world, things that happen that in the outer world, or I don't know, all sorts of things aren't under your control. Most things aren't under your control. But the things that are under your control, are, you have to recognize what they are to begin with. And you only concentrate on those. Mm. And, yes, you don't worry about, you don't catastrophize about all the things that can happen. Like, for example, I could get into a real state about the state of the world or the government or whatever, but I can't control that. I'm stuck with that. So what I have to do is control the way I think about it, the way I react to it. So if awful things happen, you can either go to pieces and say, it's the end of the world, I give up, or you change the way that you look at it and you deal with it in a different way.
Is that like the idea that it's not events which are significant, but the way that you react to events?
Exactly. Yes.
That, yeah. Like there are certain external events which, yeah, you have no control over.
Yeah.
Like, for example, the, you know, sadly, something like the death of a loved one.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, everyone, you know, no one's immortal.
Mm.
And so that's kind of, there's nothing you can do about that, that, you know, loved ones will pass away. But the way that you can control, to some extent, the way that you respond to those events.
That's right. Yeah.
And remembering that.
Recognizing the difference between the two things. You know, I can't affect that. No matter how much I worry or get upset, it's not going to change anything. So what can I change that will make me feel maybe not happier, but a bit more at ease?
Yeah. Did you mention Alcoholics Anonymous?
Yes, I think they use that, don't they?
They use it, but in the form of the Serenity Prayer, which is, I mean, they. I think in Alcoholics Anonymous, they do actually refer to God.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
It doesn't need to be God. It could be.
No.
Referring to God works for some people.
Mm.
But anyway, it's essentially the Serenity Prayer is, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
That's right. Yeah, that's very Stoic. Very much part of Stoic philosophy, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other principles which are a bit more vague. And I have to say, I have to reiterate that I am by no means an expert. I'm just someone who's interested in it. I have not studied it and I don't understand it fully. You have to realize that. So I may not be explaining it entirely correctly, but this is my understanding of it. And there's another principle is the circles of relationship. You have to imagine yourself in the middle of concentric circles going out. You're in the middle, and the next circle along is your family, your children, and so on. The next one is other relations. Next one is friends. Next one is neighbors, people in the area. Next one is the city. Next one is the world. You get the idea. And in terms of the pandemic, what you have to try and do is concentrate all those, bring them all closer together so that your extended family comes closer to your immediate family and the people in your neighborhood come closer and closer and closer, and treat everybody in the same way as you treat your family in your mind, you know, the way you think about them. It's very helpful because you feel less isolated, and you realize that millions of people are in a similar or even worse situation than you. You know, there's lots of people in a far worse situation than we are. So you have to realize that the interdependence of everybody, you're not on your own.
Yes. That is a thought that sometimes gives me some comfort.
Yes.
If I'm experiencing something stressful, difficult, or upsetting in my life, for example, I'm worried about certain issues or problems or personal things, it's always really reassuring to remember, oh, this is all totally normal.
Yeah.
Everyone else is like this too.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't give the impression, maybe that's not the version of themselves that they present to the world, but I think everyone has the same kinds of concerns and doubts and worries and things like that. You know, sometimes, for example, I'll be having a sleepless night, and you know those nights where you can't sleep?
I do, yes.
And your mind is going all over the place. And, you know, if it's easy to start thinking that you've got a problem and it's just you.
Mm.
And it doesn't have to be just a sleepless night. It could be any other kind of challenge, really. Or if you compare yourself to others, if you look at other people and think, I'm not as good as them, everyone else is doing better than I am, what's wrong with me?
Mm.
It's really useful to remember, oh, everyone thinks like this too.
Mm.
Everyone is thinking the same thing. Everyone's looking at each other and thinking, oh, I'm no good compared to everyone else. That's what we're all thinking.
Mm.
So, yeah, bringing all those circles together, bringing the sort of the outside world in the sense that you understand that we're all kind of the same to some extent is quite a reassuring thing to do.
Yes. We're part of common humanity.
Yeah.
Another one, which is sort of similar, is known as the view from above. So you have to imagine yourself in outer space looking down on the world. And you realize that again increases your realization that we are an integral part of one big whole, and that we should try and behave in a way which is good for that integral whole. You know, it's a very good way of looking at global warming and all that sort of thing, is if you're out in outer space looking down, you realize what's happening. That can encourage you to look after your little bit of the world better, you know, or working towards maybe slowing down the warming of the world and determining that we're going to do something when we can to influence those in charge to, you know, be more responsible about the way they look after the world. And in fact, the pandemic has probably been quite good for global warming because we haven't had anywhere near as much travel. And, you know, people haven't been using energy. They haven't been using petrol in the same way. And our carbon footprint has probably gone down quite a lot. Maybe there's some way we can, when it's all over, or if it ever is all over, when it's improved, we can do something to continue reducing our carbon footprint. You know, have that sort of plan in mind.
Yeah, I guess people have learnt how to live their lives without travelling quite so much.
Yes.
Although I expect that when we've got things under control a lot more and travelling suddenly becomes an option again, I guess everyone's suddenly going to travel.
Yes.
Much more. It's everyone's going to be jumping on aeroplanes
and
getting in their cars and doing tons of travel. But maybe this has been a chance for people to look at things and think, oh, you know, we can live in a slightly more sustainable way.
Yes.
It's given us some practice, I suppose.
Yes, that's right. Maybe grow your own vegetables. Just little things like that, which make you feel as though you're doing something to contribute to the well-being of the world.
Yeah, that idea that you look down on the world from above and see it as one organism and that we're all part of it.
Mm.
So if you, for example, don't recycle, you just don't think about it very much, then you're kind of hurting yourself.
Mm.
Because you are part of the whole thing. Like, you know, no one lives on their own. No man is an island.
It's that you're kind of coming on to another of these principles, which is called, and it's obviously a Greek word, so I'm probably mispronouncing it, but I think it's oikiosis. You ever come across that?
No, never had. It sounds like a disease.
Yeah. Well, it's quite the reverse.
I've got a bit of oikiosis.
Well, that's good. What it actually refers to is the fact that looking after people. But in order to look after people and people's interest, you have to have self-interest. You have to look after yourself. You have to live with wisdom, justice, courage, and moderation, and look after yourself so that you can be in a position to look after other people. It's like when you're on the plane and in the instructions they say, you know, if you've got a child that you're looking after, or it doesn't matter, you don't have to have a child, but you must always put your own, if you're in that horrible situation where the oxygen masks come down, you must always put your own mask on first before you help anyone else, because you can't help anyone if you're not looking after yourself. So that's quite good if you're tempted just to overeat or drink too much or take drugs or, you know, do anything to try and take yourself out of this world because, you know, you just can't bear it. You've got to think, well, you know, I need to be in a position where I can help other people and contribute to the health of, you know, my surroundings. And you can't do that if you don't look after yourself.
And that idea of helping other people is actually very healthy too, because it suddenly gives you a sense of value.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's very therapeutic to do things that are beneficial to others.
Mm.
You know, I've known people, I've got sort of, you know, acquaintances and friends and stuff who, after maybe a couple of decades of working on their careers and focusing really hard on climbing the corporate ladder in various companies, which, let's be honest, don't have great values, you know, those sorts of corporate environments.
Yeah.
And you're working for a company and you think, why? Eventually they think to themselves, why am I even doing this? And they feel bad that it's depressing to be contributing to a sort of corporate environment like that. And I know several people who've made a change in their careers and have gone into something much more charitable, setting up charitable foundations or working for charities. And they're so much happier as a result, because they know that they are somehow, By helping other people, they're kind of helping themselves.
Mm.
So, giving, helping, contributing, ultimately these are nourishing things to do.
They are, yeah.
Mm.
And I think those are all the things that Phil, in the film, realizes without knowing that he's going through the Stoic principles. He realizes, and the, you know, I was thinking when you were talking about the homeless man and how no matter what he does, the man always dies. Well, that's the dichotomy of control. You know, he can't affect the fact that the man, by the time he meets him, is already, you know, has terrible health and is already far gone. And no matter how much he tries to improve his life and improve his fitness and everything, he's always going to die. I mean, he's going to die because he's old, for one thing, and he's going to die because the life he's lived up till now has not been good for him. And so there's nothing Phil can do to stop him dying. But what he does is good enough, really, because he looks after, he makes his last few hours more comfortable than they would have been otherwise. So
he takes him to the local cafe, gives him bowls of soup,
yeah. Yes.
And the guy's having a fantastic time.
He is, yeah.
But then he still ends up passing out and Phil takes him to the hospital. One of the things I love about the film is that the subtle ways in which it tells you the amount of time that Phil has spent in this time loop.
Mm.
And like people online have speculated that it could be like 30 or 40 years,
yes,
in total of repeating the same day.
Yeah.
Because with the old man, the homeless man, it comes to a point where he's taking him to a hospital and the man's being treated in a hospital bed and Phil needs to go in to check on the man.
Mm.
And he sort of pushes his way into a restricted area of the hospital and the nurse is trying to stop him. And he says, you know, I need to see this guy's chart. And you realize, oh, so he must have spent quite a lot of time learning about medical,
yes,
science. And
yeah,
he's trained to become a doctor. He,
yeah,
understands the charts.
Yes.
And he also has learned that this is the way to get into the back of the hospital, is to say certain things so that the nurses know that what he's talking about. And there's loads of moments like that.
Yeah. And the fact he has time to learn to play the piano brilliantly well. And I can't remember what else, but he does all sorts of amazing things to improve himself as a human being. He does a lifetime of things.
He becomes an expert in ice sculpting.
Yes.
All, you know, he also is trying to impress Andie MacDowell because he's in love with her.
Mm.
And he kind of falls in love with her more and more as he repeats the day, as he learns more about her.
That's another thing. Of course, he talks to her and finds out about her. So she is part of his circle of relationships. And, you know, he's realizing that relationships are important and that you have to put time into them.
Yeah, he becomes more and more humane as you realize that he has spent time with almost everyone in the town.
Yes.
And
yes,
he knows all of their stories.
Yeah.
And finding out about everyone's subjective experience and personal lives gives him more humanity because the circle of relationships. Yes, he has kind of expanded his circle of relationships or consolidated all those rings.
And we all know people who, when you meet them, they're not interested in talking to you. They're not interested in asking questions about you or finding out about you. All they want to do is tell you about themselves. There are so many people like that. And that, you know, they're kind of draining to be with. You know, you want someone who's interested in what you think about things, asks you questions, not necessarily about yourself, but about, you know, what you think about things or where you've been or how you've lived your life. Those sort of people are much nicer to be with than people who just want to say, oh, well, you know, I did this and I did that and I've got this much money and blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It improves people's lives, you know, because you're taking an interest in people, and that makes people feel happier about themselves.
Yes, absolutely.
But of course, earlier on, it takes him a while to realise that, and he starts off by just trying to impress her, doesn't he? And show her how wonderful he is, instead of finding out about her. And it's when he starts to really take an interest in her as a person, not just someone to get into bed, that everything starts to work out for him.
Yes.
And of course, going back to the dichotomy of control, the really big thing is, of course, when he first realizes what's happening, he tries to escape and he just can't. He does all sorts of things to try and get out of the place. and it's impossible. And it takes him ages to realize there's no point in me doing this. I can't get out. I've just got to deal with things the way they are and make the most of what they are and, you know, control the things I can control.
The thing about the groundhog. So, one of the nice things about the film is that it all takes place in this very small town.
Punxsutawney. Which actually, I mean, it is a place, and the Groundhog Day is a thing. They do it every year on the 2nd of February.
It's just one of those American small towns where there's like the coffee shop diner and everyone knows each other and stuff like that. And Phil, who is, I guess, more of a sort of metropolitan type person who probably thinks he's better than this small town. Mm. He's above it all. Yeah, he gets stuck there. And it's quite funny seeing the clash of sort of cultures to an extent. But the thing about the groundhog is, so the tradition, and it's a real tradition, right? The tradition is that so on Groundhog Day, which is the 2nd of February every year in this town, they have this funny tradition, which is where the groundhog comes out of his hole.
Yes, except it's not a hole, it's a cage, because they keep him, you know, he's one that they keep specially.
Yeah, he's a caged animal, the poor thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's weird in a way, because Phil, the Phil is the name of the groundhog as well, isn't it? Isn't the groundhog also called Phil?
Punxsutawney Phil. Yes, that's right.
Punxsutawney Phil.
Yeah.
So this is interesting because on one hand, because Phil, played by Bill Murray, is in a way like the groundhog.
Yes.
Stuck in a cage, you know, predicting the weather. Mm. But anyway.
That's very clever. I hadn't made that connection.
So Punxsutawney Phil, the groundhog, yes, he's every 2nd of February, he's allowed out of a hole, and the tradition goes that if he turns around and looks at his shadow, it means they're going to have like another month of winter.
Yeah.
Or it's predicting when spring is going to arrive. Mm. And it's ridiculous.
Totally.
It's a ridiculous sight. It is completely stupid. It's quite cute, but it's totally stupid. But yeah, at one point, Phil kidnaps the groundhog. Mm. Yeah, there's a period where he fights against his situation.
Yeah.
And he does things like tries to commit suicide in various ways.
Oh, yes. That's after he's tried to escape and realizes he can't. And he thinks, I'll just kill myself.
And the most dramatic way he does it is he kidnaps Punxsutawney Phil, the groundhog, and like all of the town are chasing after him, including the mayor of the town and stuff. And there's a car chase, and he drives to a sort of what do you call it? Like what are those places where they're digging stones out of the ground? A quarry. He drives through a big quarry, and then drives with him and the groundhog in the car, just drives dramatically off a cliff. And the cameraman from the weather station and Andy McDowell, who's like his producer
PA,
or something,
yeah,
his PA, they watch him fly over the cliff and land on the floor. He lands on the roof of the car lands on the ground.
Mm.
And one of them goes, well, he might have survived. And then, boom, the car explodes in a huge ball of fire. He's like, I can't remember the next line, but it's like, no, I don't think so. Yeah,
never mind.
It also reminds me of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Definitely.
Which is another funny thing, because Bill Murray also was in a film adaptation of A Christmas Carol.
Mm.
It's called Scrooged.
That's right.
And he plays the part of a sort of mean, heartless businessman.
Yes.
Who goes through, who has a sort of weird supernatural experience. And that kind of teaches him various life lessons. And he emerges on the other side, a much more humane character.
The difference is, of course, that the Scrooge story relies on supernatural interference, whereas stoicism, you know, it's coming from you. It's all down to you. It's in your control. No supernatural interference or anything to do with anything supernatural. It's, you know, it's similar. It goes along with humanism, I think, because humanism is about it doesn't rely, it doesn't believe in life after death. It doesn't believe in God. It doesn't believe in extraterrestrial interference in the world. It's all about the world and what happens in the world.
Yes, and that there's no second chance.
Yeah.
What counts is people's experience now.
And learning from one's experience and becoming a better person, hopefully.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to apply, as I said, the three virtues are wisdom, justice, courage, and moderation. You have to apply all of those to every...
It's four, isn't it?
What did I say?
Three. five. Let's change it to five. Wisdom, courage, justice, moderation, and maths.
I never was any good at maths.
The five Stoic virtues.
It's a bit like Monty Python coming in, the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah. Four. Our four main principles are wisdom, courage. Our three. I'll come in again. Our three main principles.
Oh, God. Anyway, there are four. Wisdom, justice, courage, and moderation. You have to apply all those to every situation. I mean, this is the ideal, of course. Not many people can live up to it, but it's worth trying. If you try, it helps.
Do you always manage to apply these things successfully to your days?
No, of course not. But it's the trying that matters. Sometimes it works. You have to. It's like Bill, you know, Bill Murray in the film. Sometimes it doesn't work and you have to go back and start again.
Yes, absolutely. What about lockdown then? I mean, should we try and apply this to living in during the pandemic?
Well, of course, the big one is the dichotomy of control. We always come back to that one. We can't affect the fact that there is a pandemic and that there's a virus out there that's doing all sorts of untold things. We can't do anything at all about that. So we may as well forget about that as far as doing anything to stop it. But what we can do is play by the rules, do as we're told, stay at home, you know, do all the right things, get a vaccine. That's what we can do.
Wear your mask, wash your hands.
Exactly.
Ultimately, it's about focusing on yourself.
Yes.
And remembering to wear your mask and wash your hands and do the little things that we individually have to do.
Yeah.
As part of a much greater, you know, scheme of things.
Mm. And if everybody did that, it would all get a lot better much quicker. If everyone follows the rules and is sensible.
There is another thing that comes into this, of course, which is like the question of trust.
Mm.
And when you're in a society, like trusting the people who are setting and defining the rules.
Exactly.
So there's plenty of people out there who, as far as they're concerned, are doing the right things when they don't wear a mask and all that stuff.
Well, you know, the worst thing for trust in this country was Dominic Cummings' business of him driving to the other end of the country when we were just after, you know, at the very beginning when we were all in severe lockdown. But he was telling everybody that we had to stay at home and do whatever. And he took no notice and just did his own thing. Well, that, and then the Prime Minister refusing to criticize him or sack him or whatever for that. That was the worst possible thing that they could have done to destroy the trust of the people in the government. It was just appalling.
Yeah, because it's basically they say one thing and they do something else. And so
do as I do as I say.
Yeah. Well, this, we shouldn't get into the politics of it too much. Maybe that was...
No, because I can't do anything about it, so I should just shut up.
Do you really think that? You really think that we can't do anything about it? Can't we vote? Can't we campaign? Can't we? Do you think that, like, going on Twitter and sharing your opinions and arguing with people on social media, or even going out and campaigning, if it's possible, is there really nothing that we can do? I mean, how do we define what we can and what we can't do?
Well, quite. I don't know. I mean, I do all those things to try and affect things. I campaign for my party. I criticise people on Twitter. You know, the trouble is everybody on my Twitter feed believes the same as me. So I'm not influencing anybody by what I say.
You're in an echo chamber.
And also, of course, one feels totally helpless because our government has a huge majority and there's no way we're going to be able to do anything to get them out of power for 4 years or so. And also the most depressing thing is that they have no accountability when they do things that are obviously wrong and they tell lies and that sort of thing. There is no accountability. Nobody, it doesn't seem possible to punish them or remove them for all the wrong things they've done. So one does feel helpless. And, you know, one says, well, I'll, you know, we'll just do what we can for now. And when it comes closer to the election, when we might be able to affect something, then we'll get into action.
But when it comes to a case of getting so frustrated and getting upset about it and, you know, getting really depressed about it, that's when you need to get philosophical about it.
Yeah, it is.
And remember that, those Stoic virtues.
Yeah, it is.
So it doesn't mean like Stoicism, the dichotomy of control and accepting things you can't change. That doesn't mean that people should be passive.
No.
That's not what it means, really. It just means that there is a limit to what you can do.
There is.
Sometimes it's a healthy thing to remember that you know to hold your hands up and go, right, I've done what I can, and it's now out of my control.
Yes. So, you know, I've been through periods where I've watched the news and just get more and more distressed and depressed and angry about what's happening, and then you suddenly realize, well, I can't do anything to affect it at the moment. So I'll just stop that and just try and do my own bit to make my own bit of the world okay.
Yeah, because we don't need, you know, none of us need and want to have you all depressed and angry, you know, like if, in terms of making the world a better place. It's like what we said before. Which one was this? Which virtue?
Oikiosis, I think. Oikiosis, you have to look after yourself.
We don't want you in bed with oikiosis.
No. Oikiosis is a good thing.
Oh, it's good. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, we'll try and, you know, yeah. So oikiosis is a good thing. So, yeah. in terms of having an influence on the world, being happy and
you don't necessarily have to be happy and cheerful all the time, but you can be.
I mean, like not letting your anger get the better of you.
That's right.
And accepting things, that is actually a positive move.
Yes.
We're repeating ourselves now. We've been through this already.
Yes.
Yeah, we could keep going on for ages. But it's been really nice to talk to you, Mum.
Nice to talk to you too.
This has been lovely. Thanks so much for talking to me and my audience.
Well, I hope I'm by no means an expert, but it's just an interesting subject that I'm interested in, and it has helped me.
Yes.
So I'm sure it would help other people to have a go at it.
We'll be very curious to see what some listeners write in the comments section. Yeah. Listeners, does this make sense to you? Are these principles that you've come to yourselves in any way? Do you know about Stoicism? Have you read about it? Have you seen the film Groundhog Day? What did you think of it? What is Groundhog Day called in your country? Leave us your comments in the comments section. That would be very interesting. But Mum, I'll say goodbye now.
Thank you
so much, and speak to you soon.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely to see you.
You too.
All right.
Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was my mum, Jill Thompson, talking to us about being philosophical, the principles of Stoicism, the film Groundhog Day starring Bill Murray, and generally the subject of how to look after your mental health in the face of this global pandemic, and indeed other challenges that life throws in our direction. Thanks again to Mum for her contribution to this episode. Naturally, we are curious to know what you thought of this episode. As I said before, feel free to express yourself in English and share some of your thoughts in the comments section for this episode on my website or on YouTube if you're listening there. Now, I hope you didn't find this to be at all preachy. Preachy, that's when you're kind of telling people what to do, telling people how to live their lives, telling people what to think or how to behave. That's being preachy. You should do this and everyone needs to do that. So I hope you didn't find this to be preachy, as if we were dictating to people how they should live their lives. That wasn't the idea. Of course, everyone follows their own approach to dealing with life's challenges. We don't necessarily think Stoicism is the answer to everything. It's not the be-all and end-all, but it's just something that can be a bit helpful in giving you some perspective on life, especially when things get tricky for whatever reason. Mum did want me to mention a website that you can visit to find out more about Stoicism and perhaps get better explanations than the ones we gave here, because as we said, we're not experts in the subject. So the website that my mum suggested that you check out is modernstoicism.com. Okay, modernstoicism.com. I'm actually going to mention a few different links and things. You'll find these all listed on the page for this episode on my website. So the first one is modernstoicism.com, which is a website that she often uses when sort of reading about Stoicism and stuff. A summary of that website is this. So modern Stoicism is a collaboration between academics and psychotherapists founded in 2012. They offer free online courses based on ideas and practices drawn from the ancient philosophy of Stoicism, and they conduct research into the effectiveness of ancient Stoic practices. So these are people who really know what they're talking about. And in fact, I especially recommend reading an article on that website about Stoicism and the film Groundhog Day. This is the article which actually inspired us to do this episode. My mum read it and then shared it with me. The article was written by Tim LeBon, a member of the Modern Stoicism academic team, and it was published on Groundhog Day this year, the 2nd of February, 2021. So the article is called The Stoicism of Groundhog Day. In fact, I think my mum read that on the Modern Stoicism website, and that's what, I guess, inspired her to choose to watch Groundhog Day. I don't know if my parents had seen the film before. It's possible, because it's, you know, it's often on TV and stuff. But that's certainly why they chose to watch it. So my mum read the article, found it really interesting, and then said to my dad, let's watch Groundhog Day this evening. And apparently they both sat in front of the telly and watched it on DVD and really enjoyed it. And then that's kind of how we ended up, my mum and me, how we ended up kind of choosing to talk about this, because we thought it could be interesting. So modernstoicism.com, especially the Stoicism of Groundhog Day. You'll find the link for that as well in the show notes and on the page for this episode on my website. Here are some other things that you'll find listed on the website. So there's a video of Derren Brown. I often end up talking about Derren Brown. I think he's just a really interesting person. You heard me mention Derren Brown in my recent conversation with Kate Billington. We described him as a hypnotist, but actually he's kind of more than that. He does hypnotism on stage, and he does these entertaining shows which involve sort of mind magic, hypnotism, and other things of that nature. But Derren Brown is also a writer. He's written several books. He started writing about, you know, the hypnotism and those sorts of things. And then more recently, he wrote a book which is called Happy. And it's all about, well, it's all about understanding happiness in our lives, how to achieve it, how to manage it, what it is, and other things. And I think the book is based on many of the principles of Stoicism. In fact, he says that specifically. He specifically cites the Stoics and their principles and the things they said in chapters of the book. And Derren Brown was interviewed on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. I don't know if you're aware of the Joe Rogan Experience. Many of you will know about this podcast because it is one of the most famous podcasts in the world. So Derren Brown was on the Joe Rogan Experience, and he talked about happiness and Stoicism, including some things about the limits of Stoicism and things that that Stoicism doesn't quite cover, like the role of anxiety in personal development, because the Stoic model seems to be about ways of getting anxiety out of your life, or, you know, minimizing your anxiety. But as Derren Brown says, recognizing your anxiety can actually be important as a way of growing beyond challenges that you might experience. Anxiety does actually have a sort of important role to play, as long as we can keep it in check. So anyway, I thought you might find the video interesting, and, you know, because it's Derren Brown talking about Stoicism, but also because he adds things to the conversation that we didn't mention in this episode. Also on the page for the episode on the website, you'll see some video clips from the film Groundhog Day, including the touching scenes we mentioned in which Bill Murray's character attempts to save the life of a homeless man he meets, plus some other more light-hearted and humorous moments from the film. So there you go. I hope that you found all of that interesting, and if any of it is useful for you in terms of your learning of English, but also in terms of just feeling a bit better about the world, then that would be great. Okay, so let me just have a little ramble here before the end of the episode. So yeah, as I said, I'm working on Premium 29. That should be published soon. Also, recently on my YouTube channel and subscribe YouTube subscribers may have noticed that recently on the channel I posted a clip of me performing stand-up comedy on stage in London. It's like a 4-minute clip of me on stage in front of an audience. So if you want to get a sense of what I'm like on stage when I'm doing my stand-up comedy, then you can see the clip on my YouTube channel. It's called Luke Thompson Stand-Up Comedy. The clip is from a full 28-minute stand-up set I did at the Comedy Store in London a couple of years ago before COVID came along and prevented me and everyone else from doing stand-up, because obviously we can't do it anymore. Well, it's not at the moment anyway, because all the comedy venues and comedy shows are all, you know, not allowed. So, I mean, personally, I haven't been on stage doing comedy for at least a year. Anyway, so yes, the 4-minute stand-up clip is from a full 28-minute performance I did at the Comedy Store in London a couple of years ago before COVID. And if you'd like to see the full 28-minute performance, then, well, you will need to sign up to Luke's English Podcast Premium. There you go, another little plug there for the premium content. Because the comedy show is one of the things I included in the premium subscription. It's P26, actually. So again, if you want to find out about LEP Premium and sign up, just go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. And forgive me for mentioning Luke's English Podcast Premium, but it is the way that, as I've said before, it's not only how I pay for my time when doing the podcast and pay for all the other things like the hosting and all the other costs associated with doing it, but also it's how I do things like pay the rent and, you know, put food on the table. Do I put money on the table? There you go, there's money, saying to my daughter. She's like, my daughter, I'm hungry, I need food. There you go, there's some money, go and buy your own food. No, I don't put money on the table, I put food on the table and stuff. Anyway, right, so you know, you'll forgive me for promoting my own premium subscription on my own podcast, I hope. So yes, in any case, I will probably be uploading to YouTube a few other little clips of me doing stand-up, like things I've recorded over the years and I'm now finally publishing. Just a note about that. People sometimes ask me to upload more stand-up comedy clips. People write, you know, messages to me wherever, and they're like, oh, why don't you do, you know, why don't you post all of your stand-up performances online, or why don't you live stream your comedy shows and things? Well, that's not something I can always do, usually because I keep my stand-up for the stage, right? All stand-up comedians have material. These are the things they say on stage. It might look like it's all improvised and just someone talking, but a lot of the time that stuff is written in advance and practiced and developed. We call that stuff material, as I have said on the podcast before. I repeat myself a lot probably on this podcast, but after 709 episodes, I'm bound to repeat myself sometimes. Anyway, all comedians have their material, and material is quite precious to us, you see. And the thing is that if I publish all my material onto YouTube, then I would probably have to stop performing that material on stage, because there's a chance that the audience might have seen it already. You know, if the audience have seen all your clips on video and then they come and see you and you're doing the same things, that's not normally as satisfying for the audience. And so you can't really do comedy material that the audience already knows. It would be a bit like a magician doing the same trick to you again and again. So I've always held on to my stand-up material and avoided publishing it. But since I don't know when I'll be able to perform comedy on stage, I thought that I could finally share some of these clips online. And then it would maybe force me to come up with some new stuff, when the comedy shows return, whenever that is. But anyway, in the meantime, I thought, well, there's no point in just holding on to it. I might as well publish it and let people see it, even if it means I can't do it on stage anymore. We will see. But yeah, so I'll be uploading more little comedy clips on YouTube in the future. Subscribe to my YouTube channel if you'd like to get notifications whenever I upload something. And don't forget to smash that like button, of course, okay, guys? And click the bell icon. You know, all the things that all YouTubers ask you to do. Subscribe, like, leave a comment, and tap the bell icon so that you improve the, like, the visibility of my videos on YouTube, and also so that you don't miss new uploads. I've got quite a lot of episodes in the pipeline at the moment. I seem to have done loads of interviews and recordings in the last few weeks, so I've got lots of interviews backed up and lots of other episodes sort of in the pipeline, as I said. I've got quite a big backlog of episodes to work on and publish. I'll try not to publish them all too quickly. I'll try to give you enough time between each upload in order to give you a chance to keep up with all the content. But anyway, more interviews with guests will arrive in due course. Quite a lot of people have asked me in the last few days what I think of the Meghan and Harry situation. So that's Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. They recently did a big interview with Oprah Winfrey on CBS in America, and they talked all about things like how they've been treated by the royal family and the staff at Buckingham Palace and how it affected their mental health. Accusations of racism in the royal family and other controversial stuff. There are various opinions on this subject, the opinions on either side. It seems that people think that either Meghan and Harry are in the wrong, or that the palace is in the wrong, and that this is a huge indictment of the royal family and how are they, you know, how they're going to deal with it. So Meghan and Harry are wrong, or the palace are wrong, or the palace are wrong and Meghan and Harry are in the right. You know, like very divided opinions on this. And then there's a third position, I think, on this, which is that, well, in the scheme of things, it's not that important, and it feels a bit like celebrity gossip. And in fact, there are more important things that we should be spending our time and attention on at this time. And that there are more pressing and important matters in the world. So, you know, these three positions. People have wondered if I could talk to my mum or dad about it. I might do that if they fancy it. But I can say that my wife is mildly obsessed with the topic and with the whole Meghan and Harry situation. So a conversation with her on the podcast is more likely. I have to say that although my mum and dad recognise the significance of it, especially the claims against the royal family and what that could mean and how, you know, and all that stuff, although they do recognise the importance of it, I think that they're a little bit kind of fed up with it. I mean, they fall into that third category. They feel that there are more important things to talk about at this time. So maybe they're not the people to talk to. Although, of course, if I did speak to them, I'm sure they would be willing to talk and actually give us their thoughts and all that stuff. But the chances are I'll probably be talking to my wife about it, because as you heard, when was it? December? The two of us did an episode about the Crown and the royal family. And, you know, we talk about that stuff quite a lot. And so it would probably be much easier and more likely for the two of us to record something for the podcast. But we will see. Okay. In any case, I hope you've been enjoying my recent content and that it's been helping you with your English. More and more, I am convinced that doing all this regular listening practice is very good for your English. I mean, I was always convinced of that, but it's just the messages I get from listeners, the emails from listeners, with testimonies about their English and how the podcast has helped. I don't know if people aren't just trying to flatter me. I think that they genuinely want to give me their thoughts after having listened to my content for a long time. So normally it's kind of like this. You know, this is the first time I'm emailing you, Luke, and I feel like it's a long time coming because I've been listening to your content for, you know, blah, 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 years or blah, blah, months, and it's really helped me. And look at my IELTS scores. You know, people tell me about their IELTS scores and other English reports. And more generally, they tell me about how they can feel a definite improvement in their English. Now, of course, I don't get emails from people who say, I've listened to you for a year and poof, nothing, my English has not improved one iota. In fact, I feel it's got worse. Now, I don't get emails like that from people, maybe because people are just nice and they don't want to tell me their stories of failure. Or maybe there just aren't that many people out there. Maybe, you know, who'd have thought listening to this regularly could have a positive impact on your English? Maybe that's the reason I don't get the negative things. Now, I've just mentioned, I don't get many negative comments. That is not a green light for you to just send me all of the criticisms and all the your stories of failure and how frustrated you get when listening to me repeat myself sometimes. All right, fine. Or that's also not a green light for you to give me a two sentence review in which you just say that you can't stand it when I sing, and that when I sing your ears start to bleed or whatever. No, I mean, you know, I'm not inviting you to do that. You can do whatever you want. Anyway, what I'm trying to say, I got completely sidetracked by myself. What I'm trying to say is that, well, keep it up, right, listeners? Okay, because you will find that long term, it can only be helpful and healthy for your English. If you want a faster track to broadening your vocab and working on your language in various ways, then you could consider Luke's English Podcast Premium. But at the very least, listening to the podcast regularly, I think, can only be good for your English. All right. But I mean, only you can decide that one, really. Only you can decide. But I think that it's probably helpful in the grand scheme of things. So I would say keep up your listening. Keep going. It's a marathon, not a sprint, which means, you know, long-term practice is what we're looking at here. Regular practice is important. And I hope that my content makes all of that easier and more enjoyable for you. That's it for this episode, then. I will speak to you in the next one, whenever that arrives. And no song. There's no song at the end of this episode. Okay. I haven't sung on the podcast for a little while, but I keep practicing the guitar. I'm just waiting for the appropriate moment to sing on the podcast again. And now is not that moment, but maybe I did get an email, and I'm sorry. The email, you know, I've said this before, emails come into my inbox quite quickly. It's just normal. Everyone's inbox is like that. And they all go in. And sometimes I read messages and then I kind of lose them and I find it hard to find them again. But one person emailed me. She studied music. And she told me that she thought my singing was good. So there you go, right? The conclusive proof that I can sing. But no, she did, and this, she's not the only one. I have had messages from people saying, could you do more singing on the podcast? I don't want to do more. Well, I don't want to overload the podcast with my singing, or at least I still am a bit uncomfortable about doing that. I do it at the end of episodes just to give people the option not to listen to if they don't want to. But I have been thinking maybe I could do one episode where I just explore maybe like a couple of songs and look at the lyrics in particular and kind of analyze some lyrics and then maybe sing my own versions of those songs. So that's an idea, another idea. I've got, you know, there's no end of ideas. There's always ideas. Okay, I'll stop talking now. Thank you very much for listening. I'll speak to you again soon. But now all that remains to be said is goodbye. Bye, bye, bye. Bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.